Well, as I mentioned at the start of Mass, we can again say Merry Christmas today, because we understand as Catholics that Christmas is not just a day, it's a season that stretches out for a ways ahead of the day itself. So that way we can kind of take in the different facets and truths of what it means to say that God is born, that God becomes man. We do it through these little feasts and celebrations. So today, not only do we understand that God is born, but that God has a family. God has a family. So today, the feast of the Holy Family of Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, to dwell upon that fact of God becoming one of us. And then on the 1st of January every year, we understand that God has a mother. That's the feast of Mary, the mother of God. So God is born, he has a family, and God has a mother. All that together pulls together the fact that he really is one of us. He shares in our human condition in every respect except sin. The Church also uses today's feast day not only to dwell upon the reality that God is a family and drive home the truth of the Incarnation, but also to raise up for all of us the beauty and mystery and messiness of family life in this life on earth, and how God treats it very specially, and he blesses it in so many ways. So we think about families today in a very special way. So with that in mind, then, I guess the question becomes, what does one say about family life based on the feast day and on the readings for today? We're on our reading cycle here, so this year in year B, Gospel of Luke is about the presentation of the Lord at his 40th day of life in the temple. So we have that beautiful story to pull things out of about family life, plus opening readings, which are also lovely. So how about this? Just some things, let's call them three different pieces about what a family is based on this feast day, and from that, how the family as a basic unit really shapes the rest of society and why it's so important. So first thing about family life on this feast of the Holy Family and the season and context of Christmas, we'll start from the end of the Gospel and we'll work our way backwards, actually. There's a line in here at the end of the Gospel from Luke. It says that when Mary and Joseph are done at the temple, they take Jesus back to Nazareth. And it says that he grows in wisdom and in strength. He grows in wisdom and in strength. That's what the Gospel cuts out for today. This is not just a throwaway line from Luke. He has this in here very specifically for a reason. He wants to make the point that Jesus, though he was in fact a God, had to grow. As a man born like any of the rest of us, he had to grow up. We sometimes think, mistakenly, that Jesus, because he is God and man, somehow walked around this life with all the stuff beamed into his head from his dad, but not quite so. When God becomes one of us and he's born, he freely takes on the limitations of our mental and human condition. So that means he doesn't know everything. He chooses not to be truly a human person in the flesh. So therefore, like you and like me, when Jesus was a child, he had to learn things. So he grows up, Luke says. He grows. So he's formed in the customs of a family, in his cultural heritage. He was an Israelite, a Jew. He's formed to learn how to read. Luke would say to us as an adult that he reads in the synagogue as an adult, so that means Jesus was highly educated for his time. He was literate. He had to learn a trade. His father was a builder or a mason. The word carpenter is not a great translation. It's more accurately like a construction worker, so his dad would have taught him how to build things like Jesus would eventually do. So he learns all this stuff, okay, like any person has to do. He has to grow in the wisdom of life. Which means, okay, that families, okay, are places of formation. The place where Jesus was formed as a person and the virtues of humanity was his family, with his mom and his dad. A family is a place to form new persons. How are we to form them? What shape does it take? The first readings give us something of an example. From Sirach and from Colossians, these beautiful texts about what it means for kids to respect their parents, for parents to respect children. A family must be a place of mutual respect among the ages and generations and among members of the household. So that's where we learn how to take care of each other in real kindness and charity. So we're formed that way. What about Colossians, this long list of virtues about patience and forgiveness and generosity and bearing with each other's difficulties and challenges in love and in peace? So St. Paul and Sierra give us together these sort of array of human virtues that we all have to learn. So families, Okay, first and foremost, places a formation in the virtues of life. Respect, kindness, charity, gentleness, mercy, justice, forgiveness. All those things must be breathed into us as we grow up in a household. If Jesus grows in wisdom and grace, we must do the same. And the family is the way God chose to teach his son the most important characteristics of human life and virtue. So families form, first of all. What else about family life from the gospel text? We'll work our way back up to about the middle of it. And what we get out of that part is, families are places where we encounter suffering and where we encounter challenge. Maybe we could say we learn how to suffer well in the context of a family. How is that present in the gospel? Jesus, Mary, Joseph are in the temple, and Simeon, who is this sort of prophet-like figure, comes in and realizes who this family is in the Spirit's power, and looks at Mary and says very famously, your heart is going to get broken. Your heart is going to be pierced. You're going to suffer because of this child. This child is going to be a contradiction. He's going to stand for things that are going to divide peoples and nations and even the entire world, and suffering is going to come home to you, Mom. So he blesses her in the context of the knowledge that her heart would be broken in her family's lineage and genealogy and vocation in the world. And indeed, as the pages turn to the gospel, what happens? Mary and Jesus, they grow older. As an adult, she watches her son get questioned, ridiculed, get into arguments with the temple aristocracy and the Pharisees of the day. She watches his rejection, and ultimately she watches him die right in front of her. Indeed, all that Simeon says comes true. So because of her son, because of her family, her heart is broken. Therefore, none of us should be surprised if in the context of family life, there is heartache from time to time. There's going to be challenge, there's going to be division, there's going to be arguments, hopefully not constantly arguments, okay, but they are there. Hardships, difficulties, suffering comes home to us all in the context of our families. There's no escaping it in this fallen world. There is no running from it in this fallen world. Suffering is just going to be in the DNA of family life. So the gospel points us in that direction and says to all of us, if the Holy Family could suffer, your family can suffer too. They can handle hardship, you will handle hardship too. Families are the school of suffering. You learn about it, how to handle it, where it comes from, how to deal with it well and appropriately in the context of family life. Which brings us to the third piece, okay? There's a bunch more, but I'll just stop there that we can pull out of the gospel today. The families form us in virtue. We grow in them as full persons of ethics and character and goodness. Families are places of suffering and challenge where we want to handle it hopefully well. And then lastly, how do we deal with those things? How do we hold those things all together? What's the ultimate formative tool? And what is it that gets us through suffering? The answer is how the gospel opens up. It's the context of worship and prayer and the law of God. That's what families are for. At the center of them must be the church's life and the life of prayer and faith. How does the gospel open? Joseph and Mary, in obedience to the dictate of God's law, they go to the temple. For a first century Palestinian Jew, the temple is the center of your worship life. You're going to go there several times a year. So they find themselves, like we do this morning, in God's house, in a house of prayer. And we hear from Luke that they go there out of obedience to the Mosaic law, which says that on the 40th day of the firstborn male child's life, you must take him to the temple and dedicate him to God's own providence and care. Why is that? Because God says, once upon a time, when you were in Egypt, I got you out of slavery by killing their firstborns, which means that now, ever after, your firstborn males belong to me. It's my way, God says, of keeping you honest and worshiping me and not yourselves. This is extremely important as a custom. So we learn from this, okay, that Mary and Joseph were faithful. They were devout. They were believers. They followed the customs of their day, and they did so with beauty and with reverence. And when they were there, they were in the Spirit's presence in a beautiful way, and they were spoken to and blessed by prophetic figures in the temple, Simeon and Anna. So their life revolved around the idea of worship and God at the very center of it. God was their center. Indeed, the child Jesus was the bond between the two of them in a very beautiful way. So what are families for? They are first and foremost places of worship and prayer and dedication to God and to his law. So for us as Catholics, the Gospels, all the Scriptures, the Catechism, the Commandments, the Sacraments, the Saints, devotions, piety. Of course, Mass on Sunday like this, this must be the part of our life all the time, all the time. Reality is that if that's not here, okay, then we're not able to handle suffering well. It's too much for us. And we don't really form in virtue well either because it hits its limitations without the grace the sacraments provide to bring us to perfection as human beings in this life, as far as we can get anyhow. So you might say that the last point holds the first two together. And in the Holy Family, they're all held together beautifully. Formation, suffering, and suffering in the context of prayer and faith. Okay? That's what families are for. One last piece by extension, okay? You might understand why this is such a critical thing. Because what we've always said as a church is this. We'd say, you know, as the family, as the home goes, as the domestic church goes, you can expand this out to the family of the parish, to the family of the community, to the family of the entire church, to the family of a culture and of society and of all of humanity. It's like a layer cake, you know? Right there in the middle, the nucleus of the family, and then out from all of that, all of our other family obligations that extend beyond just the household. So what I just got on saying about the household family applies to every other layer of family we can think about in the world. So that means that society and parishes must be places that form us in culture and in the virtue. So society and parishes, places of ethics, decency, honesty, good discourse, respectful dialogue, hopefully in a culture. There's going to be suffering in parishes. There's going to be arguments in parishes between you all and between me and you. That's just how it goes. We should not be surprised by that because it's part of parish life. Same thing for a community. Same thing for a country. A nation is going to argue about its values and where it's going and what it means. That's part of our fallen world. And a parish, of course, must be a place of faith, and a society must be a place of faith. If worship and God's law are not at the center of a culture, then it's not going to last, because a culture cannot handle the twists and turns of human history without being grounded in the worship life that God asks us to observe and the commandments he gives us for all of our well-being. So if we don't get the family right at its most basic level, the rest of it's all going to come crashing down, see? That's what the church has said forever and ever. The family is so important. Marriage is so important. Raising up new life is so important. And all that we can do to support it, we try and do, because we know the family is what keeps everything else held together in our very topsy-turvy world. Are there any perfect families? No. Does God bless all of them? Yes. Does he draw them all to himself? Of course. And what he wants us to all strive after is what this gospel lays out. Formation, suffering well together, and above all, prayer, prayer, prayer. Keeps it all together. On I could go, but I think you get the idea. I think today for our feast day, this beautiful feast of the Holy Family, I think a good resolution is to, as much as possible, always be good members of the family. We want to pray, I want to pray, you want to pray and resolve to say, Lord, help me be a good member of my family. And not just my immediate one, my biological one, but the family of the parish, the family of West Bend or our community, the family of American society, the family of the broader church. I want to be a good member of all these layers of family. Because I know, Lord God, that it's so important to be that way. It's so important to be that way. And as I strive after that, I will trust that God's going to move into those relationships. He's going to strengthen them. And he's going to grow them. And he'll become born anew, okay, and live in the families of our lives in a way that he chose to live in one once upon a time in the beauty of Nazareth. Nazareth is where it all begins. May God bless families. May God bless our parishes, our society, our culture, our world, the human family. He bless them always in the power and strength of the gospel. And through them and in observance of it, make his world a better place, a holy place, and a place where his plan of salvation unfolds until the end of the ages.